Some of the most iconic moments in Australian sporting history, without a doubt, the 1991 Grand Final pre-match entertainment. Angry Anderson rolling around in this monstrosity of a mobile. They've called it the Batmobile. It was blue and had the AFL logo emblem on the bonnet. And we had Lisa Ondieki and her husband, I think at the time, going around the ground thinking, what the hell is happening here? It was chaos. But the Mighty Hawks won the Grand Final in 91, and that Batmobile is an iconic piece of Australian sporting memorabilia. And you know what? It was sold on the weekend. I want to know what Adam Collins, our cricketing guru and Hawks aficionado, knows about this. Collo, welcome.
G'day, Haas. How are you? Yeah, well, I'm now a shareholder in the consortium that is like the Batmobile. I mean, it's a strange of words, really, isn't it? I mean, I didn't think I'd ever be in a consortium. Essentially leading a consortium, but needs must. I saw this on this available last week, and I missed out on it in not quite similar circumstances, but it was on eBay in 2006, and the fellas I go to the footy with and I were planning on buying it then, but we were young and disorganised and all the rest, and this time around I thought, well, let's have a real pop, and here we are.
So you bought the Batmobile in a consortium. How many people are in the consortium?
I think we've got 32 people. So we ended up winning it for a tick over $25,000. So, you know, it's not a life-changing investment for anyone.
How much?
Considerable. I think we won it for, I think it was $25,300. So it's not a, you know, it's not a life-changing sum of money when you consider what it'll be divisible across that group. But it's not for nothing either. It's a big chunk of cash, and I think that people sort of realise a bit of Hawthorn history, a bit of footy history, and those of us, not everyone on there is a Hawthorn supporter, although most people are. And there was plenty of interest. I had a stack of people from who I go and watch Hawthorn with who were dead keen, and then there was an acquaintance who's become a friend, Mark Hawthorn, who is a bit of a man about town, and he knows a lot of people, and his people came together with my people, and one thing led to another, and here we are on the right side of the eBay auction.
Wow.
So Collo, when prominent supporters buy significant memorabilia for that football club, they usually donate it back to the football club, yeah. And it sits in the club's museum. Will we see the Batmobile in Hawthorn's club museum now?
Well, my first thought was actually the museum at the MCG, the National Sports Museum, I think it is. They've refurbed that over the last couple of years. Now, I'm not sure whether they'll be interested, but consider me interested. So if they want to get in touch. My overarching thinking is that when this Batmobile sat at the front of the MCG during 2015 Grand Final week, when they first brought in the public holiday, the state government had the public holiday before the Hawthorn West Coast Grand Final, of course, the relevance back to 1991. So many people queued up for their photo with it. It was a real hit. And I love that. I reckon, you know, it should be somewhere where people have access to it and get their photo taken with it. And whether that's at VFL Park or whether that's at the MCG or somewhere in between, I mean, that's a good problem to have, that we can now work through that and work out the logistics and hopefully have it preserved in perpetuity for footy fans and those who know the great story of the halftime entertainment of the 91 Grand Final at VFL Park.
Well, maybe you can put it next to that hotel on the freeway down to the Mornington Peninsula or something like that. You know, the big bird eating some cheese or whatever it's meant to be doing.
Yeah, oh, look, I think it deserves a greater prominence than that. Because remember, I mean, without overdoing the seriousness of this, because I think we all know this is at some level a bit of fun, but the 91 Grand Final for Hawthorn was special. It was the end of an era. In many respects, as far as the five premierships they won between 83 and 91, that golden generation. And that was a really special day for me as a kid and a lot of people my age who went on to see Hawthorn experience some lean years when we were going through school and all the rest until 2008 when they win the flag again. Some great times as well, of course, Huff, never forget those. But overall, it was a period for the club where we watched the 91 Grand Final over and over and over and over again. So we could all recite McEvaney Committee's commentary from that day. We all know that the ads that played on the television that day, back and front, because we had the taped off the VHS and so on from that day in 1991. So there's context there. It's not just any other half-time. And, of course, the the madness of Angry Anderson and Rob DiCostella and all the famous athletes who were there gathered around, and Jimmy Steins in his Melbourne jumper, and you know, Lisa Martin there, and Jeff Fenwick, and Fighting Harada, and Lionel Rose, and the Awesome Foursome, and Alan Borner, and Jeff, they were all there. And that's why it's such a significant moment. The YouTube video, of course, is one that we'd all know well. And I just thought that we don't want to see this car just sitting in someone's garage. Let's get it out there and make sure that it's sort of a shared asset for footy people to love and enjoy the way that we've loved and enjoyed watching that video over the years.
So does the car still work? Will I see you sort of driving up and down Chapel Street in it at some stage?
That's a great question. Look, our belief is that it works, but it hasn't got a roadworthy. I've received some advice that it'll never be registered. It's the advice I've received, but it'll never be permitted to, the Vic Roads will never give it a rego. However, our thinking at this stage is that it's not about taking it out to do some chap laps on a Saturday night. It's about making sure that we've got the chance to have it and share it and enjoy it together. And whether that means transporting it to wherever it needs to be and taking it out as and when within the rules and regulations that the Vic Roads set, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Well, it's an iconic piece of sports memorabilia. It's quite remarkable. I want to go for a spin in that one day, Collar. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I want to go for a spin.
It would be an absolute pleasure, a privilege to have you in the back of the Batmobile. We'll have to make it work.
What, so, Colo, we've spoken on this program before about the blue football on top of the VFL scoreboard that seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth. Are there other things that you are trying to get off YouTube? I believe you do have Mark Waugh's One Day International cricket pants. Didn't you get them off eBay?
Okay, I lost that auction. That's something that...
Oh, you lost?
I didn't get over the line on that, which Jeff always talks about for my final word co-host that... He witnessed me in the final throes of an eBay auction some years ago at 4 a.m. trying to win a pair of Mark Waugh's One Day trousers. Look, that didn't come off. But the Batmobile has. The football, as best I understand it, there's been some research done by some historians, let's call them, who have found out that the football probably ended up in the tip, much to my chagrin, back when they dismantled the scoreboard in 2001. So I don't think we're ever going to get the blue footy. But we do have the blue Batmobile, and as a consequence, I think they're bound for glory.
Magnificent. You are bound for glory. You're always glorious with us on The Breakfast Club. We think it's magnificent. Spent the weekend at Lords while you did it, too. It's not a bad way to have a weekend, I reckon. Watch the cricket at Lords and win the Batmobile. Well done.
Thanks, Harf. Yeah, the Lords extra bit of colour there is that as the final half an hour of the auction was ticking down, I was on commentary at the time and watching my phone... like explode with WhatsApps and so on when people were trying to tell me what was going on and trying to keep abreast of that while trying to keep an eye on the county final at Lords over the last couple of days and today at the pointy end. But yeah, I was absolutely elated to come off air and be told formally that we'd gotten over the line.
Just before I let you go, by the way, Alistair Cook, is he still the best batsman in England?
Look, I've seen Alistair Cook make a lot of hundreds, and we usually judge Alistair Cook by the volume of runs he makes rather than the way that he makes them. That's the best innings, the most stylistic innings I've ever seen him play. He batted beautifully. He struck 26 boundaries out of 172. He made it very clear he's not available for England selection anymore. He's 35 years of age, but he could totally play for England tomorrow. But I ran into the England selector, James Taylor, downstairs a couple of days ago and asked him that question. And unfortunately for England supporters, that won't be happening. But I suppose liberated by... not having to play and captain England anymore, he's still as good as ever.
Magnificent stuff, Colo. A big weekend for you and a historic one as well in the world of Australian sport. Well done.
Thanks, boys.
The Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartell.
Bartell, clever! Brilliant! Unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
Clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. That's pretty much sums up Jimmy Bartell, Triple Premiership player, Brownlow Millers, Norm Smith medals. Boy, God, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, gentlemen. I've just gone and got the fly fishing rod ready from out of the garage, and I'm just going to drop a line in the gutter in Cyril Street here. It's within 5K, so I can't go much further to go fishing, so I'll catch a few weeds.
Well, if you take your golf clubs to the pool, you're able to play, I think.
Yes, yes. I played a lot of golf with you. You do spend a lot of time in the water, so you should be very adept at it.
That's nasty, Jim. Spot on, but nasty.
Yeah. That's mean.
Imagine how bad it's going to be when we get back, Jim, after all this time off.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be terrible. There'll be shanks everywhere. But I just heard you before in the intro. Finals coming up. I think we do this every year. We stress and worry about who's going to make the finals. And, yeah, people go, oh, they'll just be making up the numbers. But every year, we look at every final and go, ooh, that's intriguing. That match has got something about it. You find something for every game. So I'm excited. I'm big Kev. Can't wait for it.
Well, we love when you're excited.
Do you think, Jimmy, though, that being said, and I don't disagree with you, do you think there is a significant gap between the top four and the bottom four? Or do you think that the bottom four can do some damage when you look at who's there compared to who's sitting there with a double chance inside the top four?
Yeah, they can certainly do some damage. I think the main concern about probably some of the sides is injuries. With West Coast, with no Elliot Yeo taking part, Collingwood, no Jeremy Howe taking part, I think that makes you a little bit apprehensive. They're still deep enough to go a long way, but Saints and Dogs, I think they can make a big charge at it.
Well, in fact, I'll throw it open to the crew. Rama, I'll get you involved, obviously, because you're the main footy man around here when Jim's around. The game you're looking forward to the most, and we've got Luke Beveridge coming up not too far away, just by the way, so we're going to have a good chat about that game. But we've got Port Adelaide and the Cats on Thursday night, Brisbane and Richmond on Friday night, the Saints and the Dogs on Saturday afternoon, and Saturday evening the Eagles and the Magpies. Jimmy's outlined a few storylines from that. Rama, which one are you most looking forward to at this time?
The Dogs and the Saints. I think the Saints, because they haven't been there for such a long time, and they've been such an exciting team to watch, just to continue to see their development as a team, and if it's real. And then the Dogs, I think from last year, they were beaten up in that elimination final against GWS, just to see how they respond. And we're obviously going to get to speak with Luke Beveridge shortly, probably to ask him that question. So that's the game that I'm most looking forward to. Obviously, the other ones are all good games, but I just think the storyline from the Dogs and the Saints will be the best this weekend.
Yeah.
Whitey, which one are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Brisbane-Richmond game because I think whoever wins that game will be the overwhelming flag favourite. I think whoever wins that game will play in the grand final and will be the team to beat. But like Rama, I'm looking forward to the Bulldogs and Kilda game as well because I think the Bulldogs, to me, is the most intriguing team inside the eight because they're so different, and I've talked about that a lot before. And from a St Kilda's perspective, having missed for such a long period of time, it's great for their fans and for the club for them to be involved again.
Jim, you got one for us?
Yeah, how about you have a hat-trick half? St Kilda v Dogs for me. I just think the Dogs, we've spoken about this, point of difference. I know we're going to speak to Bevo, but they've just got that host of midfielders. They can play with speed. They're good at contested footy, which is we know is what finals about. But also the Saints, they've got their own little point of difference with Marshall and Ryder in the ruck. King is another tall forward. And their ball movement, they're willing to go quick at different stages. And I think their back six have been a little bit underrated most of the year. I think Wilkie and Patton have been very good. They've taken good matchups. They've been very rarely beaten. So I think the Saints v Dogs for me is the most interesting. Now, to Whitey's point, the winner of Brisbane Richmond, I still don't see how Brisbane's addressed how they're going to beat Richmond. Like, I've watched a lot of Brisbane, but they've got a certain unique style about them, but I just don't know whether it suits playing the Tiggies. I still think third and fourth, Geelong, Richmond are the favourites.
Yeah, well, I think on exposed form, that's probably about right. Although I must admit, I'm coming around to the whole Brisbane-Port Adelaide thing. I'm a bit like you, Blake, so I'm surprised we're all on the same page here. The Bulldogs-Saints game is the one I'm looking forward to most. It's a fascinating contest between two really interesting teams. And whilst they may not be premiership favourites, I think, as Whitey says, they could cause some damage. Like, their best is pretty good. Like, they could cause some damage if they get it right in the next little bit. And we've seen the Dogs get it right at this time of year before.
Yeah. I think, Jimmy, the reason I say that around the Brisbane-Richmond game is more because of where the finals are going to be played. So I still feel that Richmond plays the slippery conditions better than anybody else. And I think Brisbane, the fact that the grand final's to be played at Brisbane, if they were to win their first final, it means they've got a preliminary final at home, knowing the grand final's at home. So that's why I think that's the case. Whereas with the Bulldogs, again, it's that point of difference that I think means that they sort of stand out to me as the wild card.
Yeah, well, let's have a chat about the Bulldogs, because the coach knows a fair bit about this time of year, and he's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club on a Monday morning. Luke Beveridge, good morning to you, Bevo.
Morning, Harv.
We are just talking about your game. I've just done Around the Horn with the boys, and the game that you've got against the Saints is the game we're most looking forward to out of the four finals. You've come into the game defeating Fremantle by 30 points, Hawthorn by 36, West Coast by 2, lost to Geelong by 11, then Melbourne you beat by 28 the last five games. How do you see your form coming in?
Yeah, pretty good. It has improved over the course of the year, and our challenge has been to beat a couple of sides who have been recognised as teams who are, you know, a chance at the end of the year. And yeah, the West Coast game, albeit that they've been a little bit depleted at different times, they headed us late in the last quarter to come again and win that one was really important for us. And yeah, the Geelong one, we just didn't handle the loss of the two boys in the first half, and we lost our way a little bit as the game went on, and they were just, you know, quite outstanding with their experience, and we felt like Dangerfield, like he did against Sydney last week, just took control of the game, unfortunately. But we're in reasonable nick. I think our form line stacks up okay because of the mix of teams that we've beaten.
We spoke to Jackson McRae last week, and we were talking about the 2016 campaign and being there and knowing that you can. He made a good point about the fact there's been a fair turnover since then. But just from your perspective, knowing that this is a scenario you've seen before and you've seen success from, how important is that psychologically, do you think, going into a campaign like this?
Oh, I think it helps. I mean, you know, it's always possible. We know that. Ultimately, we managed to pull it off a little while ago. But I think the interesting thing is everyone's only played each other once this year. And, and you know, we haven't beaten, you know, the top four teams and some others in there. But usually in the season proper, if you get another look at it, maybe you're better prepared. And, you know, to win the second time around. So we get a go at some of the teams that have beaten us, if we can keep going. Obviously, St Kilda are an enormous steeple for us to get over because they've been exceptional this year. You know, they've been there's been a lot of improvement, and you can really identify with a really strong brand of footy. So if we can, you know, come up and meet those challenges of the teams that have got us, then, and make some little tweaks and tap into our improvement, then, yeah, who knows?
Bevo, we have to ask you about Aaron Norton and Mitch Wallace and their availability for the weekend. Obviously, two critical components to your forward line.
Yeah, well, as you probably become aware, if you didn't already know, some of these depressed cheekbone injuries can be a little bit more severe than other less severe ones. And Aaron, you know, there was no concussion involved, which was the huge positive. He's basically been hit pretty crisp by Sean Darcy. Obviously, the big fella's got a hard head. And it was just a matter of going in and levering it out. So he's got a small cut. But he's been terrific, and he's been out of action as far as the group goes due to quarantine and COVID sort of protocols. But he'll train with the group for the first time since the surgery today, and he'll, you know, and all be, everything goes well, he'll definitely play, and Wally should be fine as well.
Bevo, Jimmy Bartel here. Sides always focus on what they do well, and especially around finals time, you focus on what you're good at. But you also got to acknowledge what St Kilda do well. What will be your big focus area for the Saints to try and take away from them?
Yeah, hi, Jimmy. They've been in all their lines. They've got significant strength, so I think they're a very even team. They really compete for the ball, and the physical side of the game holds no fears for them. So I think anyone who can trouble the Saints needs to be totally up for the fight. Their two ruckmen have been influential, not just around the footy, but forward of the ball. And I think as far as a one-on-one game goes, throughout the course of the game, they're particularly strong just with their techniques and what they pull off there. So there's sort of some fundamentals that they really do well, and they obviously work extremely hard together. There's a belief, and for them to climb the ladder and make the finals, they'll be, on top of their running on top of the ground. So there's a whole mixture of things. I think fundamentally they just play the game well.
When you were 0-2, Luke, lost that first game to Collingwood, then came back off the break and lost again quite badly to St Kilda. Were you concerned at that point, and did you have to make any changes, or did you hold your nerve looking back on it to get yourself into the position you are now?
Oh, I wouldn't say. Yeah, I won't say I wasn't concerned. I think we came into the year searching for our identity after it had been questioned post the elimination final loss, where we, obviously got strong-armed quite severely by a pretty mature GWS outfit. And I think in those first two rounds, we probably spent too much time on we didn't find the balance between the physical side of the game and just playing. And ultimately, after the second loss, we came together and probably got back to the core of why we'd be a good side again. And significantly, we were playing GWS. So we found a way to... We knew what was coming again. They tried it on again, and we found a way to find a really strong balance of playing the game and flying the flag for each other. And I think from there, we really grew as... And the unity side of it became stronger, and we started to play some better footy. So, yeah, it was a significant challenge. I think probably one of the biggest challenges, almost the biggest challenge I've had since I've coached the boys, to try and help them through it. And to their credit, they did an outstanding job to now get to a point where, we're playing some pretty good footy, and those questions around the physicality and if we're challenged on that front, I think it disappeared.
So when you're coaching that, Luke, when a team's trying to search for its identity, do you have to help them find that identity, or do they have to actually find it themselves in the way they play, particularly in high-pressure moments, which that clearly was the case in that game against the Giants in round three?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, the boys ultimately have to find the courage and and the grit and the wherewithal to just confront whatever's in front of them. But helping them as far as what the glue might be is important. And, in team sports, obviously it's more than one or two. It's in our game, you need a collective that really shows a front. And so you need everyone on board. And I think the players and the leadership group did an amazing job just to help each other to find a way there. So it's a little bit of everything, but ultimately the players are the ones who need to find that aspect, and they have.
Luke Beveridge has joined us, the coach of the Bulldogs. Got the Saints on Saturday in Game 3 of Week 1 of the AFL Finals at the Gabba, 4:40. Check your local guides. I was at that game, Bevo, in Round 2 at Marvel Stadium, where St Kilda did defeat you. And there's a lot of conversation post and during the game even about the impact of the Ryder-Marshall combination versus Tim English. Now, I think Tim English has evolved beautifully in the back end of the season, and he's probably one of your most informed players at the moment. But how much time is that going to take up from you and your match committee trying to find a way to nullify those two, particularly centre bounces, where at the Gabba can be quite destructive?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Harv. That Saints game was lost through, if you can remember, we had multiple opportunities to get a lead early and squandered them. And then our lack of attention to detail in our defensive system really cost us, and the Saints just opened us up. We had a significant correction after that game going into the next week as a team as far as how we defend. The personnel changed, and there was quite pointed reminders throughout the course of the week as to what we needed. And from then, we've improved it, and we've been better. And the Ryder Marshall side of things was, I wouldn't say it was totally integral to that victory, but Kim is actually one of the, I think he's really improved at centre bounce. I mean, we're second to West Coast on score differential as far as centre bounce goes, and that's partly what he does after the hit out with the other three mids.
Yep.
We don't win the clearance differential, but we win the score differential. So if teams do get that centre clearance, we're usually able to pressure it, and our back six can resurrect the footy. So we're one of the better teams as far as that goes. So that's important that we hold up our form line in there. And I think Tim will jump, and he'll be really instrumental in that centre bounce against those two. And then post that, we've got to look after Tim and make sure that we support him and he gets his rests, and then we come up with the right formula to ruck against those two when Tim isn't on the ground without disrupting what we want to do in the turnover game.
So, Bevo, we're obviously going into a final series, but an important finals player for you guys previously was Tory Dixon. He announced his retirement over the weekend. How significant has he been for the football club?
Yeah, his finals performances, Adam, have been just amazing. I mean, when you look at his statistics and how much he scored, and at that preliminary final when he played a negating forward role on Heath Shaw and still managed to kick, what did he kick, four or five that day?
Five,
and he had lining up for his sixth on the siren. That's just an extraordinary performance. So he's been a big game player, Tory, and as we know, he's a good kick for goal. He's had some injury post the 16-year, which, you know, on the back of losing him and Pico and Clay, who were the guys who pretty much kicked our scores in those finals, it was a difficult thing to recalibrate and find the players to then take us forward. So we haven't really had any continuity. And then when he was fit last year, Sam Lloyd, Bailey Dale, Aaron Norton, Josh Shackey, you know, their forward line was all, they're all playing well. He couldn't find his way back into the team. And yeah, he's given us great service. Our supporters will remember his feats, particularly in that 16-year, and we're really grateful for his contribution.
So this game on the weekend would have either been played at Marvel Stadium in front of 50,000 or the MCG, and there probably would have been a few more there. So the noise from both supporter groups would have been absolutely electric, considering St Kilda haven't played finals for a long time now. How do you create that atmosphere, particularly in the rooms before the game? Because you, as a player, you can hear the noise of a final in the rooms. You can hear your supporters, you know, starting to get restless because they want the game to start. It will be a little bit different, obviously, this weekend. Have you thought of any little ideas of how you're going to create that atmosphere to make sure the players are in the right frame of mind?
Yeah, I've been surprised at what's transpired on, you know, game day as far as it not really being a factor so far with no crowds or very limited crowds. And I think even though there won't be any strong representation from either supporter groups, we hope as many Bulldogs people get there as possible from the Queensland state. But I think there'll be a lot of impartial supporters who will probably be cheering, so there will be a crowd, which will be different for both teams. And I think our boys are looking forward to playing in front of at least a bigger crowd. So that's something, you know, something to look forward to. That I asked them earlier in the year, you know, what would you rather do? When you think about playing in front of crowds who aren't that parochial or not many people in the stands versus just a really boisterous 80 or 90,000 strong crowd, what would you prefer? And the boys straight away said, oh, are you kidding? Obviously, it's a big crowd. So I think there's an excitement level that we're going to actually play in front of more people. So I think that'll take care of that.
And have you found the 13-day break? Well, were you a fan of the 13-day break? Have you known yourself? Because you've been backing up on 4 and 5 day through most of the year, Bevo, and all of a sudden you get a sleep in, so to speak.
Yeah, I think we've managed our year pretty well when we've had a longer break. We've sort of gone one day on, one day off, and it does give you a chance to train and prepare a bit earlier without starting the build-up from a psychological point of view too early. So we had a good session on Saturday, and today will be more of a technical session than anything, and we'll have another pretty good hit out on Wednesday. So it just gives you a chance just to hone in on some of the tweaks that you need to make, talk about your match day plans early, and give your players a game plan that they can hang their hat on and get excited about. So that's been important, but also the lads have been able to retreat a little bit from the game and either have a hit of golf or get out and have a swim in the ocean at different times. And so that's an important thing still, that we don't just move away from that because it gets a bit more serious.
And for you, did the skateboard make it in the bag on the way up?
No, there was a fair bit of luggage, but the skateboard didn't find its way into the bag.
Well, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed, Bevo. I would have thought you'd be rolling up and down the Cavill Avenue or wherever you are at the moment in Hub Life, just enjoying the sunshine. But we wish you the best of luck on Saturday. It's going to be an absolute cracker, we reckon, against the Saints, 4:40. Check your local guys. We appreciate your time. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, Arf. Thanks, boys.
Luke Beveridge, the coach of the Western Bulldogs, with us, and that is going to be one hell of a game. The ruck matchup is critical, no doubt.
Yeah.
But they are the best team in the business. Number one rank going from defensive 50 to forward 50 in chains. So they can move the ball really effectively, Whitey, as you know, through that midfield brigade.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, Remy, you want to say something, but I just want to just jump in there and say that since those first two losses, and they were heavy losses against Collingwood and St Kilda, the Bulldogs did end up winning 10 of their last 15 matches. And they've got a bit of momentum. They've won their last three. The only loss in their last five or six has been to Geelong. Tim English had that ankle injury. He finished the season strongly. It's going to be important, as Luke said, that he at least competes with that Marshall-Ryder combination. A young man, Tim English, he's got a lot on his shoulders going into a final series.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting, his comment about finding the identity again.
Yeah.
And having to do that on the run, Jim, as he was speaking about after an 0-2 start. Credit to Luke Beveridge and his coaching staff, because that is not easy to do within a season.
Yeah, and especially, like, it seems like a lifetime ago in footy sense, but the pressure they were under going into that Giants game, where they got that unwanted tag of being soft, you never want that in especially a contact sport or AFL footy. And the fact that they answered that, I think that, you know, he was pointing to, that helped them find their identity and confidence. You saw them just grow and grow. And you mentioned it, Whitey, 10 out of the last 15. But they just seemed like they had that real balance. They had the edge in the contest, but they didn't lose that outside dash and creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the only teams that they have lost to, and this goes back to round six, the only teams they've lost to have been Richmond, Brisbane, Port Adelaide and Geelong. So I reckon where they find themselves... Yeah, that's right. So I feel that they're probably the number five seed going in, considering the health of their list compared to, say, West Coast. I reckon they're the fifth seed. So, it'll be interesting to see how they go. If they can get through the first final, how they fare, how they get through the game, going to a second one. I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit. They've got to beat St Kilda yet.
Got to get
science to touch.
Yeah. But just with what they've done, I think they're starting to be a bit more of a dependable conveyance through their second half of the year. They're all part of 16 reasons why
I love you. Just one reason will do. Just one reason will do. That's all we need around here on The Breakfast Club. Just the one reason to love us. That's okay. And that is 16 reasons, Jim and Whitey and Rama. 16 reasons from the movie Mulholland Drive. 2001.
We changed stations.
Extravaganza. No, we haven't changed stations. 2001.
You're a fan of that movie. This is Daniel really enjoys that movie, Mulholland Drive.
I've actually never seen Mulholland Drive, I must admit.
Haven't you?
Why would I have seen Mulholland Drive and enjoyed it? Whitey?
Well, it's just a very strange movie. Some interesting sort of scenes, but it's a bit of a head spinner.
Right, now I've never seen Mulholland Drive, but this is the song from Mulholland Drive. We're playing that because one of our very own was a part of that. And Naomi Watts was a part of Mulholland Drive.
She played a big part
Drive.
In that role. In that,
did she?
A very big part.
Right. Yes, well, she's having a birthday today.
RSN's own Naomi Watts.
RSN's own Naomi Watts is having a birthday today. Now, let's not ever forget where she came from. Hey Dad in 1990.
Hey Dad, yes.
Hey Dad. Magnificent stuff. Yes.
With Nudge.
With Nudge and the fat kid from Hey Dad, who nobody ever knew his name.
Betty? Just and Betty?
Arthur. Is that his name? Was it Arthur?
Yeah, Arthur.
All right, I'll take
it. Yeah, it was Arthur.
It was Arthur.
What was the dog's name? Was there a dog?
Bouncer. No, that was from...
No, that was Neighbours.
Anyway,
Neighbours. We digress. Naomi's having a birthday today, Jim. Naomi is having a birthday. Let's not ever forget that. RSN Zone. How old... I'm going to go to you first, Jim. How old is Naomi Watts?
41.
I'm seeing some typing from Whitey on the phone. I'm concerned about you.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
41 for you.
Yeah.
Righto, 41 for Naomi, says Jim. Rama?
Oh, she's either side of 50. So I'm going to go 49.
49, righto. 49 for Rama. Whitey, how old is Naomi Watts of Hey Dad fame?
I was going to go 49, so I'll go 47.
And man's done it again. Not on the number, but Rama's the winner. She's 52 today, Naomi. Jim, she'll be happy with you.
Yeah.
You're one of those guys.
Happy.
You're one of those guys that goes up to a 40-year-old. Gee, you don't look at that with 25.
Well, you're one. You're going to take 10
half
off.
Gave it away. Half gave it away when he's sort of Hey Dad in the... Yeah. Sort of 1990. There's 30 years there.
Well, I've got to give you some info. I don't want to go in.
Yeah,
totally
cold. I like it.
So Rama, victory again in the on this day special, the birthday bulletin special. Naomi Watts, happy birthday to you. It's also Gary Ayres' birthday today. He's 60 today.
Is he?
Conan, oh. He's 60. Happy birthday.
Your Harfords, your Whites, your Ramanaskises.
Well, if you go through the birthday,
he's one of the great men of football, Gary Ayres.
The Wattses, the Chilliches, the Duffs, the Webkeys, the McKinnons, the Hackinons, the Ayreses, the Rushes, whose birthdays they are today on this day. Jim,
it's Mad Monday too, Huff.
It is Mad Monday. Happy Mad Monday, everyone. Now, yesterday we all woke up a little bit sluggish after September Club on Grand Final night, of course. It was Grand Final weekend on the weekend. Well, what was supposed to be, Rama? You would have been in action at September Club, just corporating yourself silly.
No. I don't do that. We go to my wife's auntie and uncle's house for Grand Final Day every year and have a great day down there. I stay away from where you get seen. Huh? I'm not that type of like you.
Yeah, you get caught, right? He rolls in with no socks on. He's got like a real... He's got a pocket square hanging out.
The handkerchief.
Freshly polished bonds.
Real look at me sort of style.
Jim, extra I've seen you chest. On Grand Final Day, Jim. I've seen you on Grand Final Day, Jim, just with pocketfuls of cash after just fleecing some corporates for 4 minutes here and there.
So you should. You've got 3 premierships and a Norm Smith in your back pocket. I'll be fleecing too.
It's a cup.
Hey.
It's a cup.
Don't pretend it's not a significant win. My word, it was. Jim, your boys, the Cats. You've been on them heavy. Yes. You've been on them all year, particularly the back end of the year. You keep telling me Geelong by 10. Geelong by 10. Geelong by 10. They've got
5.
The power now. If I'm on Thursday, it's the power to kick it off. If I'm Kenny, your mate Kenny from Camperdown, I'm actually really pleased that we got pantsed the first time around against the Cats. I think as a coach, they're the best results if you're coming up against them when it really matters, because you can you can work out why and how and then try and rectify that. Now, it's not easy to turn it around, don't get me wrong, but I reckon going in, at least you'd back yourself in to be better, and whatever that means and how it ends up, you'd sort of, you know, the bounce of the ball might take you that way. But I reckon Kenny goes in with the best team in footy, as the latter says, and a plan in place to try and defeat Geelong. Mm. They won't let them get anywhere near away with what they got away with the first time around, surely.
Oh, well, surely, and you hope not for Port Adelaide's sake. But I sort of agree and slightly disagree with you a little bit, Harvey. When you get beaten by the side during the year and the manner that they did especially, but just say when you get beat, you want to see signs of actually what you do works well against the opposition. So you almost want to walk off the ground going, yeah, it's okay. We can do things that actually are really effective against this side. So I'll use one of my sides, for example. 2009, we come up against that powerful Saints side and, you know, one of the best games of footy ever, round 16, 17, well, I forget what round it was, both undefeated. Yeah, it's the best game of footy I've ever played in. You ask most Geelong players, it's the best game they've played in, even though it's a loss. Getting a little bit sidetracked there. But you walked off the ground and you went, what we've got is good enough. Now, it took Michael Gardner to take a big pack grab to separate us, really.
Yep.
So you walk off and you go, all right, well, we're not going into the next game thinking, geez, we've got to do a lot of things right. We hope this doesn't get away from us. I've spoken with Shane Crawford before about 2008, and he said when they played us in round 16 or 17 again, they walked off the ground and Clarko and a lot of the players were like, we did a lot right, we just made a few skill errors. Like, we're not afraid of what, you know, Geelong do. So as long as Port Adelaide saw that last game when they got trounced, as we called it, and thought, well, we did a lot right, but we didn't execute, and that's my worry with Port is I didn't see enough just yet for them to in that game where they'd walk off and go, oh, it was just more skill errors or one or two players down. I thought they got beaten on system and ball movement and the key way the Cats played their footy.
So that's the art of coaching, though, what you're talking about. You walk off the ground and your coaches are able to really pick you up quickly and go, okay, if we had done this, and this, and we hadn't allowed this, we probably win the game. I think what's keeping Kenny up at night at the moment, Whitey, is the Tom Hawkins matchup. I just think if Geelong's ball movement is quick enough, which we know is when they do move it quick, they look unstoppable, to have Jonas or Cleary or I think it's Leinart as the key defenders, they're all too small for Hawkins. Mm. So what I believe this already is that they have to be prepared to let one of the Cats forwards go and then allow one of their other defenders to sit back in front. They need to play Hawkins from behind because as soon as Hawkins gets you in front of him, he's so strong. He holds his ground so well with those big bumper bars that he uses. So they need to double team Hawkins. So I'm not sure which forward they might let go. It might be Myers, potentially, that they sort of let go and let him go up the field. But I just don't believe right at the moment Ken has that matchup that he'd be comfortable with for Hawkins.
Now, Harf, I said I sort of agree and disagree. The bit I agree with, and it's a bit what plays into what Rammer was saying with the setup, is if you've noticed in the last 6 weeks the amount of time Robbie Gray's come up and played in the midfield, and the midfield minutes of players. So I think they've added to their rotation. Now, if I'm Bell Park Ken, I'm saying we've got to dial up the pressure around the contest because that's in recent years, the Cats have sort of wilted a little bit under that, around the contest. They've fumbled and haven't won that, which then the territory game becomes important. So if Port Adelaide get their hands on the footy and dial up the pressure, if they lose it, at least it gives, as Rammer is saying, a defender an opportunity to come over and help out on Hawkins. But just get it forward and play that squeeze and that trap in your half. And then you can, if the Cats do win it, you can force them slow because you've got that numbers pressing into your half. So that's what I'd be sort of overemphasising if I'm the Port Adelaide pair. It's the contest and lots of numbers around it.
The other interesting part for Port Adelaide is what to do with Charlie Dixon early in the game. When he played Geelong earlier in the year, I think he only had three or four possessions for the game.
Yeah.
And Harry Taylor just dominated him, absolutely dominated. But what they did is they used Blitzards coming off as a defensive winger and was getting in front of his space. So I think early Ken needs to have Charlie higher up the ground. I would almost leave Robbie Gray in the goal square to start the game. Put some pressure on Jed Buse. Put some pressure on Mark O'Connor, whoever that matchup is. Because what will happen is, if Dixon plays as the deepest forward early in this game, Geelong just roll back. They roll back and double and triple team him. And then you worry about where Port Adelaide's score sources will come from. Because if Charlie doesn't mark it, he brings it to ground, and that brings in then, obviously, the power of smaller forwards. But if Geelong got the numbers around that contest, they're going to be able to take the ball away easily. And that's what they're able to do in that first half of that game. They doubled and triple-teamed Charlie, were able to take the ball away and score up the other end with Hawkins through quick ball movement. Having Dixon up higher allows the ball to get over the back, over the top, and that brings in Robbie Gray into one-on-ones. Robbie Gray inside forward 50 has been dynamic this year. So Ken's got a couple of interesting decisions to make early in the game, Whitey.
Now, Jimmy, you've obviously been close inside the Geelong camp in a final under Chris Scott. Is he dining almost out on the fact that they've got the finals experience that Port Adelaide doesn't have? Is that the sort of coach he is, that he reminds his players of that advantage, or does he keep it sort of unemotional and he's more about the tactics of the game and not really sort of a rah-rah-rah sort of coach?
I think that's been Chris Scott's skill. He's got the mix of both. So I think he keeps it pretty, call it cold and tactical. But if he needs to be, he's got the emotion up his sleeve. He doesn't, you know, just play one or the other. He chops and changes. And so I think during the week, he keeps it pretty cold. There's a lot of video. He brings in his line coaches, obviously Matt Scarlett, you know, defensive structures and things like that. Whoever's in charge of setting up around the midfield sort of stuff, it's like, yep, everyone's on the same page. This is what we're doing. But at quarter time and half time, if he needs the emotion, that's when he pulls that card out. So he has that flexibility. He's not the fire and brimstone all the time, but he's not also the analytics coach.
It's going to be fascinating. You're right about Charlie Dixon's role too, Remmer. They all fold it back into his space. So if he plays high, he can take the advantage away from the Cats.
Lead back a bit, yeah.
Yeah, lead back and let the smalls get the business a little bit deeper in the 50.
Well, that's what you need to do now against Harry Taylor. Like, you turn Harry Taylor around, as good a player as he is. He's, you know, his agility is obviously not there as it once was. So Charlie needs to move Taylor around as much as he possibly can.
Righto, we'll get to a break 10 to 8. Great to have Jimmy Bartel with us on a Monday morning on The Breakfast Club. We're building up to week one of the finals, of course, on Thursday night. Port and Geelong kick it off. Two other games that we haven't spoken about, with the Tigers and the Lions and the Pies and the Eagles over there in Perth Town. A bit to get through. And there's some player movement conversations going around too. And I think Rammer is neck deep into it. Neck deep into it. He will be the most famous man through the AFL trade period all year. We might touch base with Rammer a little bit later on.
He trained strongly out here. We had a bit of a hit out 2 days ago, and he looked good to go. And it's just a testament to Dion's professionalism that he's got himself up to play. He's had a bit of a rough trot with, obviously, the syndesmosis and a few complications from that, but he's put himself in a great position to play footy.
There you go. That's Jack Riewoldt, the spearhead from the Tigers, talking about Dion Prestia and his return to the Tigers. Just what they need, boys. Another superstar coming back in for the finals campaign. How do you reckon it all fits in, Jim? The return of the Prestia types?
Oh, well, premiership player, best and fairest winner in a premiership player, you make room for those sort of players. And I guess we had that discussion with the Cats, how to get the balance. But I think you can bring Prestia back in because they've been able to add the likes of, Shai Bolton in there. So he's a point of difference as well. So you can have him swapping over from half forward onto the interchange, out on the wing. So midfield depth, and Rammer has touched on this before. It's your midfield depth and contest and your fundamentals in big finals stand up. So, you want to get him back in. He's not going to be absolutely flying first game back, but if they win first final, another week, he gets another week of training and prep, ready for a prelim.
The interesting part, Half, is actually how much work he's done, because he hasn't played a game, obviously. So Richmond obviously will know his workload that he's undertaken through training. But you've got to be careful. I think just as important as Prestia is for Richmond, Jared Berry is just as important for the Brisbane Lions, and make sure he's playing, because he's a really, really, because he's a bigger midfielder, which sort of Brisbane don't have a lot of. So they've got sort of Jared Lyons, but they need Jared Berry playing just for that little bit more depth.
Yeah. I agree with that. Jared Berry is a very important player for the Brisbane Lions in that game, Whitey.
Well, we saw the situation with Shane Edwards having missed so much footy, how quickly he just came straight back into the team and made a difference. The difference was he wasn't injured like Prestia was.
Yeah, spot on.
But still just finding his place and being able to get back into a rhythm of a game, and the role that he played within a team that's been fairly settled over the last period of time. It's like he was never gone.
Yeah. Fascinating. The other game is, of course, West Coast and Collingwood, Jim. And Ross Lyon said something interesting, which is I've been thinking about a lot in the last 4 or 5 days, about the fact that they've had time to acclimatise. Now, they're in quarantine over in Perth, the Magpies, but they're not travelling the day before and having the body clocks out and having that one day at the buffet and all that sort of stuff. By the time they play the game, life will be... and you know I can get you.
Yeah,
by the time they play the game,
the
life will be normal.
Apple crumble.
Life will be normal for them next week by the time it's ready for the game day, Jim. Does that help the Magpies?
Well, that's what you're drawing upon. You mentioned that with Chris Scott and things like that, what will coaches be drawing on? You'd be looking for every little angle you can, going, look, we've been here, we're settled, time zones, we're good to go, it's just in our company, all that sort of stuff. It could help. We'll soon find out. If they get torched by 8 goals in the first quarter, it could be a good excuse why it couldn't help being away from anything. But everyone's been on the road, really, apart from the Queensland team. So I think it balances out. Elliot Yeo, though, missing for West Coast now. Jeremy Howe missing. I think they start to balance each other out with injuries. Does Big McGovern get back, Rammer? Any update on whether McGovern gets back in?
Yeah, I'm not sure about McGovern, but I think for the Pies, they've done this before. They've gone over to Perth and been able to win finals before, but they've done that with steel side bottom.
Yeah.
Without steel side bottom, I just think it's going to be a bridge too far for the Pies, unfortunately. And I say that is because side bottom can go forward and kick 2 or 3, or he can stay in the midfield and get 30 or 35. He's that sort of type of player. He's a finals player. He's always played really well in finals, except for the grand final against West Coast in 18, where he was tagged out of it by Hutchings. But I don't know. I think the West Coast injuries, yep, you're spot on with that. But just without side bottom, it might be too difficult for the Pies.
It is a fascinating injury list the West Coast have got. I mean, Cripps, Hutchings, who was very good from the finals campaign a couple of years ago, Kennedy, McGovern, Redden, Shuey, Vardy if they need him. They're all available for sort of that test selection or just not quite sure. It's a fascinating list and what they end up putting out there, Whitey.
But see, Redden has done well for them in finals in recent years because he's that sort of inside player. So when you've got Yeo, who also fits that that brief, there's two there, and then Shuey is your captain and your electric midfielder. It does put a lot of pressure on Tim Kelly, Andrew Gaff. And look, they've managed to go okay in recent times, but to me it's about the forward line. Can Collingwood, with their defence, stop West Coast with their tall forwards? And a lot of that depends on whether Kennedy plays.
West Coast could be the Bulldogs of 2016, where the Bulldogs had that bye, obviously, before the finals, and were able to get a number of players back. West Coast could be the same. Obviously, we know Elliot Yeo's not going to be there for the remainder of the season, which is a big loss. But you're right, all those players are test. I believe Shuey's going to be fine. The other ones, I'm not 100% sure on yet.
Yeah, you go through the injury list for the Magpies. It says Ben Reed's 1 to 2 weeks. Might be a bit longer than that. He's retired.
So he's still on the injury list. He might be out for one to two weeks.
Just one final one on that Collingwood West Coast situation, guys. That Nathan Buckley said, "Oh well, I know that you guys are going to look back on the last time we played West Coast, but we're not going to as a team. We're moving forward, and we're a lot different to what we were when we got beaten by them and beaten by them comfortably." Do you think that they will be referencing that? Round eight, it was 18-3 to six goals nine to West Coast.
Yeah.
I think a bit of it too is you've got to think if you're Collingwood and your match committee, surely they couldn't be that perfect again. You remember that game, they kicked 18 goals three, but I think they only had about 32 inside 450s. It was the perfect date. Natanui, I think, the first quarter, they hit it down, went inside. It was like football training where you go, let's hit the full forward on the lead coming out of the goal square sort of stuff. It was a perfect day for the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't think Adam Simpson will be bringing that up, I'll tell you that much. He'll be taking the focus right off that game and worrying about what's in front of him. They'll be a damaging and a dangerous conveyance, no doubt, the Magpies, on Friday night.
Saturday night. What West Coast did that day, they made Darcy more accountable. They made him actually, you know, have to sit on an opponent. They hit up his opponent quite a lot in that game. So I think the use of Darcy Moore this week for the Pies becomes really important. Without Jeremy Howell, obviously, they lack that intercept marking option. I think, obviously, Jordan Ruffhead will go to Josh Kennedy. It's who goes to Jack Darling. It's who gets that matchup. Do they say to Darcy Moore, it's your matchup, but Darling's a real hit-up type of player. Like, Moore can definitely go with him with pace, but he loves to drop off and he loves to try to intercept and be a nuisance in that defensive 50. So I think that's probably the matchup that Nathan Buckley will be thinking about most at the moment.
All right, it's going to be good fun watching it all unfold. And next Monday, Jim, when you're with us again, there's going to be a fair bit to dissect. Two teams will be gone. Two teams will be ready for a prelim. And four hanging on for their footballing lives. Mm. Looking forward to it, mate. Have a great week. We'll look forward to catching up with you next Monday on The Breakfast Club.
Can't wait. Thanks, man.
Great stuff. Jimmy Bartel, triple premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist. Cometh the occasion. And James was there doing his thing, like a few others and since before him.
So the skipper drops it at her feet, and Australia take an unassailable lead in this series. Just too good, too classy.
That's exactly what they were, too classy. It was a winning double on the weekend for the Australian women's cricket team up at AB Field in Brisbane. Great to have some cricket back on the box. And the girls, the world champions, started their summer magnificently. Sophie Molyneux did it as well. Player of the match yesterday, and she joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Soph.
Morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. That's a nice way to start, isn't it? A couple of games on the weekend, you get a couple of wins, you get some confidence up after a long time out. How did it feel to be back out there?
Yeah, it was a long time coming, but it was a great weekend. We're sort of chomping at the bits to get out there and play cricket again, and to be able to do it in front of a crowd was pretty cool as well. But to walk away with a couple of wins, we're definitely very happy about that.
Did you know what it was going to look like? How nervous were you about what it perhaps might look like from the team's perspective? Because out of the game for so long, you're the current world champs, of course, after the final in March. But that's a long time ago, and anything can happen after a layoff like that.
It's 6 months, apart. It's probably been the longest period of time that we haven't been together as a group. And coming back together about a week ago, we had two practice matches and centre wickets, and everyone sort of jumped back into the form they were in pretty much 6 months ago. So I suppose it was very different sort of preparation, but it was the weekend, and we were just really excited to get out there and play cricket again.
So Sophie, Saturday's game ebbed and flowed a little bit, but yesterday was dominant. What changed for you guys yesterday to be so dominant?
Saturday was, there's a lot of nerves from both ends, I think. But, yesterday was pretty good. I think we sort of learnt, we were able to adjust a little bit. The conditions were pretty been a friendly, I suppose, but which sort of plays into our favour. We've got four or five spinners, but I think we sort of learned about the conditions and the wind and everything, and come back yesterday, and we're able to string a little bit of good performance together, and we were lucky that we got away with that win.
Obviously, it was it's the first time since the heroics at the MCG, which feels like about 7 years ago. But what did, just getting back into the rhythm again, did you feel like it just came straight back?
As I said, I think we're all prepared on today. Getting together about a week ago, I think we didn't talk too much about 6 months ago, that's for sure. We knew that we sort of had to crack on and look forward, because it's a massive summer of cricket. We've got a lot of games coming up, and I think at the start there, we're all just, as I said, chomping at the bit to be able to get out there and play, and I think that probably showed a little bit. We were a little bit nervous early on, and I think that was from both teams, but as I said, it was just great to be able to get out there, play cricket, and hopefully it'll hopefully the series continues to go well.
And so what are you guys trying to do to get better? I mean, clearly you're the world's best at the moment, particularly when it comes to T20 cricket. That's been proven. What are the sort of things you're looking at doing to make sure you get even further in front of whether it be New Zealand, England, India, or whoever it is?
I think, we've made a pretty conscious effort to keep pushing it out. And, we haven't had the pre-season or the winter that we sort of planned, but... neither as anyone around the world, but we definitely want to keep pushing the boundaries and keep expanding. And Midge come out and said that she changed her game personally, and I think that's I suppose that's what it's coming down to at the moment. Each individual in the group has gone away and worked on different things and come back as different and better cricketers, hopefully.
When you have a long layoff from the game, sometimes it can be difficult. The game can just be harder to play. Did you notice things that just changed? Is the game a little bit harder, or is it just, like riding a bike again?
There was definitely over the weekend, there was going in waves of momentum and who had the game in their favour, that's for sure. But I wouldn't say it was like riding a bike again. that's for sure.
What about the wicket you're playing on, Soph? I think you're playing on the same wicket all the way through the series. Do you have to adapt, particularly from a bowling perspective, do you have to adapt the way you bowl, the length you bowl, the line you bowl, because of the state of the wicket and the fact that it does degrade over time?
I think it was a little bit unexpected to get out there in it. It had a little bit of turn in it, which is pretty rare for an Australian flat deck. So, we got four or five spinners in our squad at the moment, so I think we're all pretty happy about that. But I suppose over the next couple of days, I can't imagine the wicket changing too much. So I think it's definitely got a bit of turn in it, and I think that we adjusted pretty well yesterday compared to the day before. We sort of gave it a chance to be able to spin, and even Amelia Kerr yesterday got spin both ways as well. So Wednesday should be interesting.
Yeah, so you've won the series, the T20 series, 2-0, and the third game's on Wednesday, as you say. Will Motti change the squad up a bit and try a few things and give a few opportunities, or effectively be the same squad, same team?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that one. I'm not sure where they're going to lead that way. We've got a big squad of 18, which is pretty rare in in our sort of setup. So there's definitely, a number of players on the bench that'd be able to come out and play a role and impact the game straight away, which is, the beauty of our squad at the moment.
Well, as player of the match, you make sure that you demand that you will be playing. So if I don't care if there's a rotation policy or not, we need you out there as the queen with the bowl in hand, taking all the wickets. We appreciate your time. Great to see you back in action, the Aussie girls, on the weekend. Long may your success continue. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.